ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
As the Democratic National Convention is about to get underway here in Milwaukee, the deep disappointment of what might have been is inescapable. The prospect of hosting more than 50,000 visitors during the convention and showcasing the city and state to audiences around the world mainly evaporated with the decision to have a nearly all virtual event because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But small as it may be, the convention will still go on here in Milwaukee, with Democrats formally nominating Joe Biden to be the party's candidate in the November election. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk about the DNC with two of UWM's distinguished professors of political science. Kathy Dolan is the author of When Does Gender Matter? Women Candidates and Gender Stereotypes in American Elections. Her research interests include electoral behavior, political participation, and women and politics. She is also the co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Political Science. Joining us with Kathy on the program is Tom Holbrook. He is the Wilder Crane Professor of Government at UWM. He's the author of Altered States, Changing Populations, Changing Parties, and the Transformation of the American Political Landscape. Tom has studied campaigns for the past three decades, focusing on campaigns and elections, political behavior, and the research methods in political science. Kathy, Tom, welcome to today's program. Great to have you with us. Now, we should tell our guests we're recording this a few days before the convention begins and before Joe Biden announces who his vice presidential running mate will be. So we're going to talk more about that in a minute, but we just wanted full disclosure because we still don't know what our listeners may know when our program airs in just a few days. Let me begin with you, Kathy, and talk about the virtual convention format. What are your expectations now that everything is almost all going to be online instead of in person?
Well, you know, for people who follow political parties and political scientists and the media, certainly, this will be a very different year with very different conventions. But to some degree, I'm not sure if it's going to be terribly different from the perspective of the consumer, right? The voter and the person out watching in public. There will be less of the convention shown on television than there have been in years past, but most voters consume the convention either through watching something on television or maybe reading a story about it in the paper the next day. So that experience won't really change. The people who want to see who, you know, Vice President Biden is, want to talk and want to hear from some of the people who speak on his behalf, all of that will be similar. It obviously won't be with a ballroom full of thousands of delegates. And so the energy will be different, which may lead to a different kind of speech or video presentation. But I'm not sure that the average person paying attention will realize that it was going to be in Milwaukee. They're not sure. They're not going to know that it isn't necessarily. So it's a real blow to us here. It's a real blow, you know, in terms of political scientists and people who like to study these things. But I think the basic and important elements, you know, will still take place. And so voters will still sort of have access to the conventions in a way that serves them.
Tom, how about your view take on this? You've studied campaigns for 30 years. It certainly is going to be, I think, less spontaneous feeling because we know that Zoom and Team does have limitations when it comes to that energy that you normally get in live events. What do you think?
Well, one thing is spontaneity is not necessarily a good thing when you're trying to run a convention. One of the nice things about this from the perspective of the candidates and the campaigns is they do get to have a little bit more control. There won't be, shots of the anti-Biden crowd in the rafters, you know, waving their signs, trying to interrupt the speeches. So at some level, it gives the candidates a lot more control over what the message is that's going out. And second, what Kathy said about people still getting exposure to the campaign, or at least as much as they might usually. Maybe, you know, political junkies like us tune in all day, every day, and we read as much as we possibly can. But the average voter is going to, you know, maybe pick up something in primetime television or the morning headline in the Journal Sentinel, and those things will still be there. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, they're still going to get probably 4 days of relatively uninterrupted media coverage of their campaign message. And that's what's really important for the candidates, at least in terms of getting any sort of bounce out of the convention. Now, the one advantage Biden has is going into the convention, and I would guess this is going to be maybe Wednesday or Thursday, he's going to drop the vice presidential nominee name. And that's going to sort of kickstart what is really the convention coverage. He'll get wall-to-wall publicity as soon as he does that, and that's going to give him a lot of media momentum going into the convention. So I think in terms of what matters to candidates, this format might not matter a lot. As Kathy said, though, locally, it's just a real shame. You know, universities, all the universities here in town were prepping for things for the students to do and ways in which the campuses could get involved. And, you know, beyond universities, just, you know, thousands and thousands of volunteers. And it's just a real shame for Milwaukee that we're not going to have the convention here. But there are, you know, it's in the long list of things that are that we're not getting these days. So and it is a long list.
Yeah, you know, deep disappointment, but you play with the hand that you've been dealt, I guess, right? And
it'll be
interesting to see what kind of references network correspondents, network anchors make to Milwaukee, knowing that they're not going to be up in the rafters in a special election set.
Yeah. Will they broadcast from Karl Rausch still?
Exactly. Tom, you mentioned the post-convention bounce. Yeah. How important is the energy and the greater attention on a candidate right after a convention is over? How important is that to the ultimate outcome of the election in November?
Well, one thing that's changed in the last few election cycles is we've been having these conventions later and later. So here we are, we'll be middle to late August having the two conventions back to back. So they kind of set the stage for the fall campaign. Used to be we'd have conventions in middle July, early August, and there was still, you know, some period of time between conventions and what we typically think of as the real kickoff of the fall campaign. So whatever the scene looks like coming out of the conventions in terms of, you know, poll numbers for Biden and Trump, it's not that those numbers are going to stick throughout the rest of the campaign, but they do sort of signal where the fall campaign is, and things tend not to change a lot once we get into middle of September. So getting a little momentum coming out of August can be pretty important. I will say, though, that from about 2000 to 2016, the average convention bounce has only been about 2 percentage points, 2.4, 2.5 percentage points. So that's one thing that's changed a bit. And I suspect part of that is because they're being held so late in the summer now.
Yeah. Kathy, you mentioned the impact and the disappointment for political scientists. Let's talk about that a little bit. You and your colleagues had some big plans, both for the convention here in Milwaukee and the one that was or is supposed to take place in some shape or form in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. And yes, we did. You're exactly right, Tom. There were four or five or six of us on the faculty at UWM in political science who were working with a group of corresponding faculty at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte on a series of projects to study some of the convention delegates, both Republican and Democratic. Charlotte has hosted a convention before. They'd had a Democratic convention earlier. And so they had a lot of practice, and they sort of understood how it was going to play out. So they were really you know, working with us and helping us to try to get a sense of what impact this would have, you know, on the city, what research questions were possible given the magnitude of the event. And we had what we thought was a really fun partnership. And then, you know, when the president pulled or went through the period where he had pulled much of it from Charlotte, that didn't seem, you know, to help our partnership. And then it was becoming more obvious by the day that there would be fewer and fewer elements of the convention. So, you know, unfortunately, small loss in the relative scheme of what COVID has done to the United States. But it would have been a really interesting and kind of fruitful way to study two different conventions, two cities, two political parties, the candidates, the voters attached to each. It would have been fun.
Yeah. What kind of questions do you think you might have been able to answer, or at least questions you would have been asking had the convention been, you know, a traditional convention?
Well, one of the things that I think was most interesting about the partnership was just the incredible range of things. I myself was interested in working with a couple of the people at UNC Charlotte to examine the patterns of recruitment of women and people of color within each political party. So we know that women and people of color are dramatically underrepresented in elected office in the United States. They are better represented among Democrats and among Republicans. And so we wanted to talk to convention delegates, talk to party leaders about efforts that they made or don't make, you know, to diversify the candidate pool in their parties. Tom had some things he was interested in. We had other colleagues who were interested in the sort of big city, urban elements of bringing something like this to your city. We have another colleague who studies political parties, you know, who was really in the thick of the very traditional convention elements. So one of the things that was great about it was how much different focus, you know, or how many different foci we could bring to just a whole series of questions.
And of course, from your standpoint, both of you live here in Milwaukee, you know the city, you know the state, and that certainly would have been not just informative, but I suspect enjoyable to be able to answer those questions in your own backyard.
Well, and you know, the other thing is that we had been working pretty hard to try to get experiencers for our students to be involved in the convention as well. So it really wasn't just a loss for us as political scientists, but we had, you know, student internships and trying to connect them to different elements and to get them involved in a lot of, you know, real hands-on politics and convention work. So that's another opportunity, you know, that's lost as well.
Tom, as you take a look at past conventions, the question that I've been asking myself is how different is the COVID crisis from some of the other big historical events that have occurred or were underway when other conventions were held? Thinking of world wars, you know, thinking of a depression. Was there anything in the past that could equal the kind of trauma that our country is experiencing because of COVID?
No, there really hasn't been. I mean, especially if you think about the convention setting, because the sort of modern conventions where candidates are selected more through the primary process and the convention floor fights have some more meaning. The modern conventions really kicked off after, I'd say probably 1960. So back in World War II, the Great Depression, there was very little popular input into the selection of the party nominees. So it's really kind of hard to compare those sort of, you know, the scope of those events to what's going on now, especially how they had an impact on the conventions. You know, the Vietnam War and the upset surrounding the 68 Democratic Convention, certainly. But I think it just doesn't really compare to what's going on now. I mean, the entire country is, everything's sort of being put on hold, or lots of things, let me say, are being put on hold. Everybody's experiencing this COVID crisis. The you know, the virus can be anywhere. It's clearly affecting both parties. It's not as if this is one thing that's going to affect one party's convention and not the others. Now, one way in which it does play out politically, though, is that President Trump is in charge now. So at some level, this crisis that's affecting everybody becomes politically charged as well. And you'll hear a lot from both sides about handling of the COVID crisis. And so I suspect it'll have an impact on the messages coming out of the convention. And that will differ, of course, from the Democrats to the Republicans. But in terms of what it does to the staging of the conventions, I think that's going to be pretty much felt about the same way by both parties.
It's going to be fascinating viewing. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in our remote studios today are Kathleen Dolan and Tom Holbrook. Both are distinguished professors of political science at UWM. And our focus again is the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, about to get underway. I mentioned at the beginning of today's program that we're recording this a few days before the convention starts, actually just before Joe Biden is expected to announce his vice presidential candidate pick. So we don't know at this recording who it's going to be, but we have been told it will be a woman. So Kathleen, you've been studying politics and gender, women in politics. This is a pretty momentous event, isn't it? Knowing that that we've been warned for months that you are going to have a mixed gender ticket for the Democrats with a man and a woman. We have had female candidates on the ballot before, but this is the first one where we've been told expect it. It's coming.
Yes, and I'm going to take a different word choice. You said we were warned it's going to be a male-female ticket. I'm going to say that we have been delighted at the opportunity to have more diversity in our major party tickets. So yes, Vice President Biden announced several months ago that he was going to name a woman, and this will be only the third time that a major party in the United States has nominated a woman to be vice president. And so those of us who study gender politics see this as a really exciting opportunity, in part because while Geraldine Ferraro and Sarah Palin both were major party candidates for vice president, neither of those tickets had as good a potential to be elected as does the Biden whoever ticket. You may remember that in 1984, Walter Mondale won one of 50 states. And in 2008, there was very little chance that John McCain was going to win that election. And his choosing of Sarah Palin didn't alter that calculus too much. So we're facing a situation right now with President Trump's relative unpopularity and the relative success of the Biden campaign so far at providing what seems to be, at least in the public opinion polls, a popular alternative. And so I think one of the interesting things is not only is he going to nominate a woman to be his vice presidential running mate, but that person stands a better chance to be vice president than any woman ever has in history. So I think that is a really important part of this. And I'm sure it's a really important part of his selection process as well.
Well, and not only stands a good chance this time around to become vice president, but looking at Joe Biden's age and what might be happening 3 years from now when the race for president will be up and running again in 24, right? The vice presidential candidate, one would presume, would be a prime candidate to lead the ticket.
Yes, that's right. And a part of the conversation as you follow in the media is, you know, the potential for this to sort of shape at least the short-term future of the party. I mean, this person may become president during a term if something unfortunate were to happen to Vice President Biden, were he elected president. And so his age, right, changes the calculation for what he has to think about in terms of having somebody who is ready on day one, as they like to say. And even, right, if nothing unfortunate happens to him, odds are he may consider himself a one-term president, right? And so then a sitting vice president would certainly be in the strongest position, or at least in a very strong position, to be a potential nominee for the top job in 2024.
Sure. It certainly is going to make ratings good as election week comes, or convention week comes, as we see this story unfold in front of us. Tom, let's shift the paradigm a bit. Let's talk about Republicans and what they're thinking as a Democratic convention is about to begin here in Milwaukee. Is there anything the Democrats can or should be doing to convince Republicans during the DNC that they should consider shifting their vote for this this November?
Yeah, well, you know, 4 years ago, there was a group of Republicans who refer to themselves as Never Trumpers, or at least would sort of declare that they weren't excited about the Trump candidacy. And by and large, most of those people ended up supporting Trump in his first bid for the presidency. I think there are a few more of those folks this time around who are going to be easier to pick off for the Democrats. You have some Republican groups actively campaigning against the president right now, mostly sort of old school Republicans, maybe moderate Republicans, you know, from the previous Bush administrations, a lot of them anyway. So there's a group of people there who seem to be ripe for the picking, but we're still talking there about Republican elites mostly. To some extent, there is a more moderate wing of the Republican Party in the electorate. It's fairly small, though. So I think, you know, Biden can certainly try to sort of message to them. And I think there's been talk, for instance, about having John Kasich speak at the convention. I don't know if that's still on or not, the former Republican governor and presidential candidate from Ohio. Those sort of things will certainly be intended to appeal to those voters. But it's sort of a tightrope, because at the same time, you still have the progressive wing of the Democratic Party who are not entirely comfortable with Biden, not to the same extent that they weren't comfortable with Hillary Clinton. But he's got to be careful not to alienate them very much at all. And, you know, the vice presidential pick might be one way of doing that. But I think that probably what's more important for Biden, and really for most candidates during the convention period, is to make sure and lock down their base. Okay, do what you can to appeal to the core of the Democratic Party. And I think, again, the vice presidential nominee could go a long way toward that. You know, there will be overtures to Republicans as well, but the real job of the convention is to get your partisans together. Sort of, if there are elements of the party that are uncomfortable with the nominee, to try to bring them on board. So I think that'll be the primary focus.
What's your take, Kathy?
Well, you know, there's so much going on, right? I mean, there's a lot of signaling that's been talked about with regard to the choice. One of the things we keep hearing is that events that have occurred over the summer have put pressure on Vice President Biden to name a woman of color, particularly an African-American woman, because of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and the focus on racial justice in the United States. And people say that, you know, since African-American women are the most sort of strongly Democratic part of the Democratic Party's coalition, that his acknowledgement of their power and their role in the party, you know, could be served by choosing an African-American woman as well. So there are lots of sort of, you know, very current influences on at least the way people are interpreting the choice. I mean, I think in the end he will choose the person he thinks is ready and best to be a president after him. But there are lots of other sort of, you know, very topical political considerations in this climate that I'm sure he's taking into account as well.
Do you think it's likely that there will be some, but how many Republican women might be attracted to a Biden ticket because he will have a female vice presidential candidate?
Close to zero. There's very little evidence that people cross party lines to vote for a candidate of their same sex. Party voters don't flee their party to avoid a woman candidate. Party people don't cross over into the other party to be attracted to a woman candidate. You know, are there a handful of super moderate Republican women in the suburbs who might want to do that? Sure. But, you know, my Christmas card list was probably longer than the number of women who might do that. And those women who do that probably aren't really Republicans. You know, they may be people who might think of themselves that way casually for some set of social or political identity reasons. It might be more that independent women voters who maybe go back and forth across elections, you know, maybe they vote for Republicans sometime and Democrats in other circumstances, might be more at play. But there are very few Republican women who will cross away from the president to vote for Vice President Biden and his running mate.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and I really want to ask this question. Fewer than, 90 plus days until the election now, should Joe Biden come out of his basement and start becoming more visible? Or as political scientist, would you advise him to just keep doing what he's been doing?
Well, I saw him on a bicycle the other day, so he left the basement for a few minutes. He'll get out and campaign more. And probably go to a few places. Expect to see him do a lot of local media very soon around the country, but you can do that remotely as well. At some level, whatever he's done so far has sort of been working. And until that formula seems not to work anymore, I think he needs to be careful about changing things too much.
How about you, Kathy?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, it has been working pretty well. I think, you know, the theme, if there is one theme to his campaign so far already, it is sort of, you know, being the grown-up in the room and providing stability. And so through his campaign, I think he signals how seriously he and we in the country need to take the current situation. So at some level, it would be a little irresponsible for him to do too much that tries to make the campaign, you know, very public, or, you know, obviously no gatherings or anything like that. So I think right now he's running the campaign that makes sense for today.
Well, we are going to have an interesting week coming up in Milwaukee with the convention here. Certainly not as much fun as we had hoped it would be. But as I said before, it is what it is, right? You have to make the best of it. And certainly we will hope that Milwaukee gets more than a few mentions in the course of the week. Yeah. Not what we might have expected, right. but you know, at least the convention is still being anchored here. Well, thank you so much, Kathy and Tom. Really, really appreciate your insights. I think we'd love to have you back on as we move towards the final election day results.
Well, we're not going anywhere. So yeah.
You know where to find us.
Yeah.
Kathy Dolan and Tom Holbrook, both distinguished professors of political science at UWM, our guests on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for joining us. Take care, everybody. Stay healthy, and we'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.